We're doing the Netivot Shalom. We're up to the third section. We're discussing Tshuva. Ve'od rekha ikari lachet. There's another backdrop to transgression. Hamabat hametzumtzam shel ha'adam. Man's limited scope. Al kol tiferet ha'briya. When one looks at all the glory of creation. When we look around, what do we see? And that's a reflection of where our soul is. What makes man different than the animal? The animal is constantly looking down at the earth. Oh yeah, he picks up his head, but he has to pick up his head. The average animal, when it travels, its head is facing down. Most animals are bent over, they're facing down. The animal is technically always looking to its source of food. But that's not how man was created. Man stands upright. He can lift his head. He can see limitless distance to the breadth and width. As the verse says, I take a look at your heavens, the handiwork of your fingers, so to speak. David the Melech says, I note the wonders of nature. I look at the moon, I look at the stars you established. And through looking at nature, man is supposed to see the Creator within creation. As the verse says, Yeshaya says, lift up to the heavens your eyes. Take note, who created all this? When man has sunk into the animalistic part of life, his vision is very limited. You ever talk to someone who's intent on buying a car? Did you ever notice how every conversation goes back to that car? And then right after they buy it, very often every conversation goes back to that car again. Because they're very focused on something. When a person is focused on matters of the materialistic world, so then his vision becomes diminished. He's very focused, so to speak, very limited in what he sees. Ve'ro'eh rak et atzmo. And part of it is that man becomes egocentric. When we are so connected to the physical world, it's not just that our vision is limited that we don't see God. It's that our vision is limited that we don't see anything but ourselves. And all we see are the materialistic things that interest us. I remember when we came to Yeshiva, Shir Aleph. So the first day we had an opening speech. And Rabbi Yaakov Shapiro, who is now the Rosh Yeshiva of Merkaz Harav, in my days it was his father, so he gave us the opening speech, and he said, you know, some people come to yeshiva, and they spend their days in the lunchroom. Oh, they also go to Beis Medrash, but their mind and heart is in breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That's where their mind is. They learn in between meals. But that's what they're doing. They're learning in between meals. You want to eat in between learning. So that stuck with me. I remember the whole first year I was asking myself, am I learning in between meals or eating between learning? It was hard to know. So when one is focused on the material world, so one is also very focused on oneself. Ve'tshukotav, one is very in tune with what his desires are. Hana'otav, one is very connected to his pleasures. Ta'anugav ba'miyim, his very animalistic pleasures. And eino mesugal lirot ma shelemala mimenu. He can't see what's above him. Ki hariya ba'amit hii metzumtzemet. Because an animal has very limited vision. And I often feel, when I'm upset at something, I often feel I have to go back to Beis Medrash. I'm connecting to life. When I go back and I sit down on a Gemara for 3-4 hours, I walk out of the Beis Medrash and I look back at my troubles, and I say to myself, wait, why was that? Why did that bother me so much? Because my vision became very limited. My problems became very big. You know, Rav Nachman of Breslov writes that you take a coin, you put it in front of your eye, the smallest coin can block out the sun.
The question is, how close is it to your eye? So very often in life, we wake up and our troubles seem enormous. Are they enormous, or are we letting them fill the scope of our screen? And I'm telling you personally, I find the only way to come out of this problem is to come into Beis Medrash and learn for 3-4 hours. I sit down, I learn a piece of Gemara, I learn Tanakh, I start getting a different vantage point, suddenly I come back, I come out of Beis Medrash, it's a different life. And I think in married life it's the same thing. When a couple has an issue, it seems like the whole world is destroyed. That's it. There's nothing else left to the world. And very often, even on a medical issue. I remember twice. Once I had something above my eye, and it kept getting bigger. And I didn't know what it was. And it kept getting bigger. And a day passes, and 2 days, and 3 days, and suddenly I can't open my eye too much. So finally I go to the doctor, right? I don't know what you guys are like, but I don't go till I really have to, which is a bad thing, right? I always tell myself I should have gone a day earlier. So I'm working on myself. I also have to work on my midot. That's one of the things I work on, to go to the doctor a day earlier, not a day later. So I show up at the doctor, and he says, oh, it's nothing. Don't worry, it'll pass. Didn't feel like nothing. And I can't open my eyes. And he tells me, yeah, it'll pass. Just put antibiotic on and it'll pass. Before I went to the doctor, I had a hard time thinking about anything else. I'm wondering, what have I got here? He was right, passed. Second time, I had something behind my ear. It turns out it was cellulitis. But all I saw was that there's something red behind my ear that's growing from hour to hour. And suddenly I get a fever, and something behind my ear keeps growing from hour to hour. And until I could get an appointment at the doctor, it's just growing and spreading. You don't know what it is. Now go learn. Go think about something else in your life, right? I had a wonderful blessing. I just bought, just before that, Maseches Derech Eretz. We discussed Maseches Derech Eretz on Monday in our Parsha class, or in our Jewish home class. We discussed the story about Hillel and his wife from Masech Derech Eretz. So the first time I learned it was then. I had to go to a doctor's office and the waiting room was packed. I had hours to wait before he'd see me. They were sticking me in between between patients. Hours. I walk into the waiting room and I see everyone around me. That's it. I know I'm here till the night. Okay, but at least by the night time I'll know if I'm going to live or die, right? So I took out my Masech Derech Eretz. And I learned, and Masech Derech Eretz is very interesting. Suddenly I'm in a different world. I walked in, I couldn't smile. 3 hours later, life looks different. It tells us in Tivot Shalom, when we have a problem, and it can be a health issue, it can be a serious issue in life, but our vision gets very limited. We discussed the story earlier tonight, the story of the Rebbe that blessed the guy, he should have many problems. Because when a person has one problem, and that's all he's thinking about, he can't see anything beyond that. But that also is a backdrop to transgression. Because that focus is really not only a focus on the problem, it's also a focus on ourselves. And when we can connect to Torah, when we can connect to bettering ourselves, then we're connecting to a broader scope. Life should take on a different scope when you learn Torah. Vehu al derech hatinok. And you know what this is like? This is such a beautiful metaphor. We just have to remember it. Hatinok. It's like a baby. Sheim lokchim imenu mischako, sherko pachot mishave pruta. You have a baby. He has the stupidest toy. The baby finds a broken acorn on the ground, and he starts playing with it. And you take it from the baby. Now it's a worthless toy. Bochemara, the baby cries the most bitter cry. It's like the whole world's being destroyed. I always marvel at my little ones when they do that. You know, a kid's going to take a glass cup off the table, and they think it's so much fun, and you see them about to throw it, and you take it out of their hand, and the kid looks at you. You are the most cruel creature on the planet in the kid's eyes. And the kid starts wailing and pounding, and the kid can cry for 3 minutes straight at the top of their lungs. And what'd you do to the kid? You saved them from cutting himself, right? It doesn't matter. Every time I look at the kid, I look at the child and I tell myself, that's me. God looks at me the same way. I am just as babyish. When things bother me, I am the same baby. I have a hard time seeing anything but what's bothering me. That's my problem. So I'm more sophisticated, right? My problems are bigger, more important, right? That's what I convince myself. Every time I look at the baby crying, I tell myself, I am no different than that baby. Says the Tivot Shalom, you have an adult, you have a baby, you take the smallest thing from the baby, he cries as though the whole world's been destroyed. And the adult who stands on the side laughs. Because the adult knows it's really not worth anything. But the child has a limited scope. And in a child's mind, that is everything. I want to take a minute to talk. Let's just talk about something else for a second. One of the goals we have as parents, if he's touched on this, it's an important point. We have to learn to talk the child's language. When you tell a child a story, so very often you're trying to get a point across. So you're going to tell a story about a person who didn't fill gas, and that's why ultimately his car wouldn't work, right? So you tell the kid, I want to tell you a story. This guy had an amazing car. You want to tell the kid how if he doesn't eat well, then ultimately it comes back to haunt him. If you eat well, you have the strength, you can do things. So I want to tell you a story about a guy who had a car. And the guy would never bother filling gas. He kept driving and he never thought he has to fill gas. And you know what happened? So you're about to hit the punchline and the kid goes, what type of car was it? And you go, doesn't matter. And the kid says, but what type of car was it? It was a Mazda. And the kid goes, what year? You go, really doesn't matter. And the kid goes, but what year? So you say, 2000. And the kid goes, and what color? And you go, it really doesn't matter. And the kid goes, but what color was it? Now, at this point, you lose your patience. If you're a normal parent, you say, it doesn't matter. I'm telling you a story. He didn't fill the gas. So the kid goes, but what gas stations were near his house? And you go, it doesn't matter. I'm telling you, the guy didn't fill the gas. What's the difference? Because in a child's perception, the story is very real and vivid. So he wants all the details. You know what point you're getting at, so the details don't matter to you, but that's perfectly normal. It's perfectly normal that in a child's mind, every detail of the story is important. And if you're really a good storyteller, you would take that into account in advance. You would start the story and say, there's this guy who lives down the block from us. You know, three houses down from us. He used to live there 7 years ago before you were born. Okay? This guy, he was tall, he was handsome, he was good looking, he was very intelligent. There was one thing he did stupidly. He was married and he had three kids. He also had a pet dog whose name was Fuji. Now, he had this car. It was a Mazda 2004. Nice, beautiful blue car. And the kid's sitting there having real satisfaction because in his imagination, he wants to imagine a full story. We as adults, we want to tell him a little story because we want to say a central point. In his mind, he wants to hear the full story. So you tell him, three houses down. You know that house with the broken fence? Once upon a time, the fence wasn't broken. There was a guy there. His name? Yeah, it's important, of course. His name was Mr. Schwanheiser. Schwanheiser, yeah, it's a funny name. We all used to laugh at it too. What difference does it make, right? But to the kid, it makes a difference. If you can make it true, even better. But my point, again, we touched on a point of chinuch, so I just want you to know, you will all be parents, God willing. You have to know that it's not only about a candy that a child is very focused. When you tell them a story in a child's mind, every detail of the story is important. And you have to work with the child's mind. So coming back to the Netivot Shalom. The child's mind is limited. In his imagination, that acorn he was playing with is his whole world. Well, proportionately, we as adults are really doing the same thing. Everyone has someone who's bigger than him, who could look down at him, so to speak, just like we look at a child, and wonder, this is what his mind is busy with? So I look at people on the bus who are playing silly games with their cell phone. And I wonder, don't they have something more productive to do with their time? But you know what? I'm sure there are people bigger than me who could look down at me and say the same thing. Doesn't he have more productive things to do with his time? Whenever there's someone above us, I was just commenting to my wife. We got to see her grandparents this past week. They should live and be well. I said to her, did you notice that your grandparents, every time they leave, they give us a different blessing? We're married, thank God, 13 years, almost 13 years. So every time we meet her grandparents, they give us a different blessing. I told her, did you notice? Every time, their blessing is exactly what we need at this stage of life. They know, they've been through it, they look at us with grandparents' eyes, they look at us with the wisdom of age, and every time they tell us, we wish you that, never the same line, every time something else, depending on what we have to deal with in life at that stage. So, at every stage, there's someone who looks down at us, someone who's been there, someone who's done that, someone who looks at us from the vantage, the wisdom of a higher perspective. And in some way, we're all like that baby that the toy is really important to us. In some way, every person has this limited scope and he's very focused on himself. That's why our sages taught, a person doesn't transgress unless some foolishness has really entered them. And the grandfather, the holy grandfather of Slonim, used to say, "Ki chol avara she'adam over, tzadit et chalakim uruach shtut, v'rak chelek ha'meh hu yetzarara." He used to say, anytime a person transgresses, 99 out of 100 components are foolishness. Only 1 out of 100 is yetzer hara. 99 out of 100 components of what leads us to do what's wrong is foolishness. There's only 1 out of 100 that's really leading us, that's yetzer hara. Ki bizman shemitorer l'ta'ava shfela mitztamtzemet ta'ato. When a person is aroused to a desire that's really beneath his dignity, if we think about it, so then a person's scope becomes limited. A person suddenly becomes so focused, the only thing he sees in life is his desire. Suddenly he becomes very focused on that. If a person could only lift the scope, if one could only look at the world differently, if he could notice there's a creator here, then a person would be disgusted with the idea. He would say, how could I lose my whole world for this disgusting desire? And that's one of the tips. When a person has a desire and he feels like he's going to lose it, go to Beis Medrash. Try learning for an hour or two and then deciding. One of the ways I'll tell you a story. When I came to Israel, so I grew up in a house where my father, my grandfather from both sides, many people I saw. I'm going to skip to another point. One of the things that are most destructive in marriage are a person's base desires. People have all kinds of imagined things they want to do in married life. And technically, most things are permissible with one's wife. If he's happy and she's happy. But what really happens is that instead of focusing on connecting to the person is focusing on fulfilling their desires, and they're missing that amazing connection that should be happening between a husband and wife, because their thoughts are all about their imagined pleasures. And be'emet, in truth, when a person's focused on their desires, they're really focused on themselves. They're not thinking about the other person. No one's telling a person not to have a good time with their wife. Go have a good time. But people have imaginations. And then what happens is they're never happy. Because there's always something else to try. Or maybe this will be better or that will be better. It doesn't work that way. They're missing the whole point. The real happiness and the physical connection is when there's a real connection, when there's real love. And that can't happen when a person is so limited in their scope and focused on themselves. And a person says, but all I'm thinking about is that I want X or Y or Z. Right, that's exactly the point. That's what we just read. This comes to play most in married life. where a person gets caught up with his imagination and fantasies, and that's all he could think about. Right, exactly. Go to Beis Medrash. Open a sefer. Widen your vantage point. That's what the Netivot Shalom was saying. You want to know what the backdrop for sin is. So the third point he's made here is when a person narrows his vantage point. Suddenly he looks at the world in a very narrow way. He's thinking about the materialistic things that he desires. Broaden your horizon, says the Netivot Shalom. When you connect to Torah, when you connect to spirituality, you look at the world differently. Suddenly there's more to the world than that little thing that I was so focused on. Just like the baby, he's got, you take something from him, that's it, his world's destroyed. That's the only thing that existed for that moment. We're the same way. Says the Netivot Shalom, Ki bizman shemitorer l'tava shvela mitztamtzem et ha'tov ro'e et kol olamo b'tavato. That's the idea that a person doesn't transgress unless there's some foolishness that goes into him, because suddenly the whole world is only that desire. I'll give you an example. Two people were standing, and one offers the other something to eat. The guy who receives it is hungry, and it's a luscious fruit. But he was told that this fruit has a lot of worms in it. Now, he's hungry and thirsty, and he's holding this, let's say, luscious fig. And right now, all he's thinking about is, I want that fig. But wait a second, are there worms in there or not? But on the moment, all he's thinking about is, that looks delicious. Ooh, that smells good. Isn't it foolish? If you'd walk away for a minute, you'd think about the weight of eating one fig versus the weight of eating one worm. Is it really worth it? Oh, if you know how to check a fig, fine. But if you don't know, if you're just going to eat that fig and not know, you're going to walk away and think back to that fig and ask yourself, was it worth it? Why did I do that? How many times do we have challenges where suddenly it's you come to a place and the steak that's sizzling there smells amazing. And all you think about for that moment is you're taking in the scent and you want to buy a steak there, and you go looking for the Hechsher and you see a photocopied Hechsher on the wall and you ask yourself, is that legit? And you tell yourself, no, it isn't. And then you say, oh, they're probably just missing the original. So why? Because in that moment, all you're thinking about is that steak. What a limited viewpoint. We all know that a day later you'll look back at it and you'll have mixed feelings. The steak will have tasted good. And there's that little gnawing conscience that says, you shouldn't have done that. But that's when you have a broader vantage point. Every time we deal with temptation, what's really happening is we're becoming very focused and our vantage point is very limited. Our scope is very limited. And our scope is really about ourselves. That's the powerful point he made in the beginning. What we're really doing is we're only thinking about what I want. And if we'd raise our vantage point, then we would look down at it and say, I'm going to sell my soul for a piece of steak. And this concept is alluded to in the verse, the people of Israel go out to war. Who are they fighting? The Midianites. Why are they fighting the Midianites? Because the Midianites sent their girls to be promiscuous with us and lead us to sin. They come back from war and they tell Moshe, we were only 12,000 against the whole people. We were supposed to do a small attack. We ended up conquering the whole Midianite people. We conquered their whole territory. We destroyed all of Midian. That wasn't the plan. We went out to do just a little bit of guerrilla warfare, and we saw not only we won the war, we didn't lose a person. We checked, we took account, all 12,000 came back. This is a phenomenal miracle what happened here. We want to give a sacrifice. But the way they word it is, we took account of the men of war. We didn't lose anyone. It says, Avadecha nasu. We, nasu could mean we took account. Nasu could mean we lifted. Rosh could mean a final head count. Rosh could mean we lifted the heads. The leaders were saying, we lifted our heads. We spoke to the people before they went to war. We gave them a different vantage point. Suddenly the people who went to war said, the same thing happened. You know, we went to war. You know what happened? The Midianites sent all their girls decked out. All the girls were all dressed up, trying to seduce the men going out to war. What did they do? They gave them pep talks. They said to them, what are you doing? You're men of God. You're supposed to lead the whole world to a better place. You have a mission in this world. You have a task in this world. Think about life. Suddenly they went to war and they looked at them and it didn't affect them. They weren't interested. That's why we didn't lose anyone at war. You know, Rabbi Akiva was taken by the Roman emperor at one point. He was put in prison. And the Roman emperor sent in naked women to try and seduce him. And all night long, they were touching him and trying to arouse him and seduce him. And all night long, Rabbi Akiva turned to his left and spat at one, and turned to his right and spat at the other. And that's what he was doing all night. Every time they'd approach him, he'd spit in their direction. So the emperor calls in the women and says, what happened during the night? So the women said, look, we're experts at what we do. We've never seen anything like this. He's not human. Something's wrong with that man. So the emperor calls him in and says, look, you're a married man. You have children. Are you not human? Are you not like us? So Rabbi Akiva says, I'm just like you, but what can I do? Every time they'd approach me, it smelled like rotten meat to me, like a carcass. I felt like there was a rotten piece of meat walking my way. I just spat at it, that's all. Ah, but that's Rabbi Akiva. Because to Rabbi Akiva, when he sees his wife, he doesn't see her as a piece of holy flesh. He sees her as a holy human being. There's spirituality there. So when it's only meat that's approaching him, that's rotten. It doesn't even attract him. That's because his vantage point is on a higher level. And that's why these men could go to war and they're trying to be seduced. No one fell. Because the backdrop to a fall is a vantage point of an animal. The animal is always with its head down. The animal only sees the trough. When a person's vantage point, when his scope is limited, when his mind is focused on the materialistic world, all of life, everything he does is very limited. Torato mitzumtzemet, when he walks in and learns a little bit of Torah, that's also limited. His Torah is not broad. He has a very hard time seeing the breadth of halacha. Avodato mitzumtzemet, his service of Hashem, every mitzvah, every prayer, his mind is always limited. It's coming back to that point. The Torah says, just taste it. You'll see, Hashem is good, His Torah is good, life is an observant good is good. Yeah, that's only if I can be open to that greatness. All the pleasures of the world really don't come close to the real pleasure of connecting to Torah. But it's hard to sense that. The more we're connected to the physical, material world, the more difficult it is to sense that. And when a person allows his focus to be limited, all his actions and thoughts are very close to the animals. The Talmud says a very powerful line. The Talmud says, "De'a kanita machasalta." If you bought knowledge, what are you missing in life? De'a chasalta. If you lost knowledge, makanita, then what's the value of what you've acquired? So that's the third point that Tivot Shalom says. The third background to transgression is a limited scope. A person doesn't see anything but himself and his desires. That's the third background to transgression. That limited scope. So far we've learned three backgrounds to transgression. Number one, who remembers? What was number one? What was number one? We said there's desire for life and desire for destruction. Within man, there are two things. By the same token that we have a desire to go for life and productivity, there's also that destruction, that desire to be destructive. That was background number one to transgression. Background number two was a person's midot. He said about how a person has to work on their midot, and that allows him to connect to Torah, to holiness. And that's the idea he quoted from the prince who's sent away from the king, the mashal that it says in Kitvei HaKodesh. And now the prince has a challenge to perfect his traits. The more he perfects his traits, the more he can imagine himself back in the palace. Our soul comes down to earth. Suddenly it's far away. Where's their bone shalom? I don't see him. Ah, I could have a good time. But if I work on my traits, that's how we work our way up to prophecy. That's how we work our way up to connection to Hashem. By being a better person to the fellow man, that's how I become a better person. That allows me to see Hashem in my life. And finally, the point we learned tonight, the third point, is that limited scope. When a person allows himself to focus on the animalistic part of life, his scope becomes limited, and then he's really being self-centered. He has a hard time to see that breath of Torah, and that's how we discuss that one of the ways to overcome our desires is to come back into the base medrash, take an hour or two and learn, and suddenly we walk away with a different perspective on life. Suddenly our vantage point is different. Suddenly our problems carry a different magnitude. They're real, but we can see them in the scope of real life. And we have a broader scope, we have the strength to deal with our desires and our problems. We become human, as he said. The animal is always looking down, looking at its food. The man is looking up. He can see the world. He can see the greatness in creation. And he can have that vantage point on life. We'll end with a famous Hasidic story. Maybe someone here will be able to fill in the names for me. I don't remember. One of the Hasidic Rebbes had a student who came to him with his problems. And he said, Rebbe, I'm so plagued. I've got so many tzars. Things are going so wrong in my life. Everything's bad. So the Rebbe sent him, I don't remember to which Hasidish Rebbe, that was known that everything in his life was catastrophic. That, you guys... Reb Zusha was the one who sent, or the one who he was sent to?
He was sent to
Reb Zusha. The Baal Shem Tov sent the Hasid to Reb Zusha. Okay. So now we have the name.
That's what I remember.
I don't know. Anyways, you both agree he was sent to Reb Zusha. And Reb Zusha was known that his life was one catastrophe after another. So the Chassid comes and knocks on his door, and he says, the Rebbe sent him. He says, sent you to me? Must be a mistake, you got the wrong house. He says, no, he sent me to you. He said, can't be. He said, what can I tell you? So he said, what do you mean? I got tzaras. And the Rebbe said, I should come to you, because you have tzaras, and you'll be able to tell me how to deal with mine. So Reb Zusha said, you see, you got the wrong house. I don't have any tzaras. Right? When you have a huge vantage point, then all the catastrophes of life take on a different vantage point. And we'll conclude with the speech that's quoted in the biography of the Klosenberger Rebbe. The Klosenberger Rebbe was in the ghettos. He had lost his whole family. His children were murdered before his eyes, his wife. Everything was finished. And it is quoted in the biography on the Klosenberger Rebbe that he was in the camps and they asked him to give a speech before Yom Kippur. And he gathered everyone together and he said, when we think about tshuva, so I don't want to discuss the times that we each thought of throwing ourselves at the electrocuted fences. That tshuva you don't need me for. I don't want to discuss the mornings that we opened our eyes to the smell of flesh burning and wished that we would be one of those who did not open our eyes. That tshuva, you don't need me for. I want to discuss one vantage point of tshuva. Those mornings that we got out of bed and said, Mode ani lefanecha, melech chai v'kayam, shechezerta bi nishmati bechemla, rabba emunatecha. How great is your faith? And I want to discuss those mornings where we said, rabba emunatecha, and we weren't happy enough. How many times did we say Modani and we weren't happy enough for another day in the service of the Creator? We have the merits, we're living another day. It's another day in the service of the Almighty. That's something to be happy about. And that's where we have to do our tshuva. Our tshuva has to be in the happiness that we have one more day to serve the Creator. We don't know what tomorrow will bring, but we know what today has brought. It has brought us another opportunity. And so we have to be happy. The Rebbe of Klosenberg made it out of the ghettos. He remarried. He had many children. And he built a whole fantastic Hasidut in Bnei Brak. Not only thousands of Hasidim. He helped so many people who came out of the Holocaust. He helped them rebuild their lives. He built hospitals. He built yeshivas. He built institutions. Because he was able to look at life and be happy. And life was a catastrophe. He had no prophecy that he was going to make it out alive. We look at our problems and they fill the screen. It's like we began with the mashal that Rav Nachman says, you put a coin next to your eye, you can't see the sun. Yeah, we put coins in front of our eyes. money troubles us, other things trouble us. It's like there's no world out there, but there is a world out there. And we have a tremendous opportunity, Rabbi Munatecha, we have a tremendous opportunity to say it with happiness. If we can only open our eyes to see a broader vantage point. And the key to opening our eyes is what we just learned. We connect to Torah, we open our eyes, we see a bigger world. There are more important things than my little troubles. Ah, but my little troubles seem so big. And sometimes my troubles are about Klal Yisrael. I'm so troubled when I see what's going on. How could it be that soldiers are dying and really we should fight this war a little differently? And there are things that really bother me and they seem so big. But I'm a pawn. And this period is a part of a broader period. There's a broader world and Jewish history going on here. And I can be a big part of that, a big positive part of that, if I can see the bigger picture. If I don't let the little things limit my scope, limit me to see my problems and my limitations, let me see the bigger picture and how I can be a part of the positive part of that bigger picture. So that's the third background to transgression that the Nativat Shalom speaks about. When our scope gets limited, then it's very easy to focus on that limitation, which leads us to sin, to transgression. The broader perspective leads us to a broader life, a life of productivity.